jumper on the way. Good! Tyus Battle nails the three.
Dungy leaps and into the end zone for Dungy. A touchdown.
If that's not on every highlight show tonight, then I don't know who's watching.
Howard for Dungy. Soaring through the air. High flying Slovakian.
Screen pass here. He'll get one. And he stays alive, and he's got room to the 10. One man to beat. He'll do it. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And for Syracuse, party time.
The upset pulled by the Orange. They defeat Clemson 27-24.
The penetration. Step back. Oh, a pressure bucket for Tyus Battle.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg, powered by Drivers Village and Hummel's Office Plus.
Welcome in, welcome aboard a Tuesday edition of Orange Nation here on ESPN Radio. Seth Goldberg, Stephen Fonte with you up until 2 o'clock. 315-437-7644 is the telephone number, 288-0644 on the text line. Plenty to get to today, Steve. We'll be joined by somebody from the Syracuse Crunch coming up at about 1 o'clock. We're waiting for practice to wrap up, see who's around, see who's available. But at 1 o'clock, we'll be joined and talking some Syracuse Crunch at the start of hour number 2. We'll have Tommy coming in. He just texts me and tells me this or that for today's... I don't know what we still haven't come up with a name. We're still workshopping a name. Game time, pick and pop, pick and roll, posting up. I don't know.
Tommy time.
Tommy time? All right.
That just came to me.
We'll figure something out.
I don't love it.
I don't either. We'll figure something out. I don't love any of the ones I named, to be fair. I'm not picking on anything in particular. I don't love any of the ones that we named. So we're still working through that, but we'll have Tommy come in about half an hour from now, and we'll get that. We'll have today's business. Got a sound check as well, including a fantastic call in what was a very boring game last night, Nets and Sixers. Very boring fourth quarter. Kevin Harlan had a fantastic call, so we'll get to that in soundcheck later as well.
How about the Warriors blowing that 31-point lead last night? DeMarcus Cousins goes down with injury.
You know, it's funny because I had that game on, and it was like 12 o'clock. It was the second half. It was the third quarter. They're winning by something like 20, 25 points. And I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to go to sleep if I leave this game on. So I change the channel. I end up putting Netflix on. I go to sleep. And I wake up to learn that they lost. And I can't remember being that stunned by a result when I woke up the next morning. Like, they were up so much in that building with that team. I couldn't believe that they lost.
I did much the same thing. So I was at Channel 9. I had the game on in the office while I was working. And as I was kind of wrapping things up for the night, you know, I think it was 23 in the third quarter. And I was like, all right, I've had enough of this. And
we're good
I,
here.
You know, I turned off the TVs and went home. And I didn't turn the TV on when I got home. I just did a few things and went to bed. And same thing, I get up this morning. I'm like, what? Like, they lost? Like, I did a double take. But
I was stunned. I look at my phone and there were two alerts. There was that one. There was and there was the one that we were going to get to here in a couple minutes of Russell Wilson has reached a contract extension. Those were the two alerts that were on my phone. And, you know, look, the Russell Wilson one wasn't shocking. Like, if you're the Seahawks, you have to do that. The Warriors losing in the fashion that they lost was shocking when I saw that pop up on my phone.
You just kind of gloss over, oh, okay, $140 million, highest paid player in NFL history.
Oh,
okay,
makes sense,
wait, the Warriors lost? You know, and we could discuss as the show moves along, and maybe we'll even get into it in today's business, whether or not this affects the Warriors. Sounds like Cousins is going to be out for a while, if not for the rest of the playoffs. How much does that impact their chances?
He is out for the season, by the way.
Did they say that?
Yeah.
Okay, I saw that Steve Kerr had said a while and that they didn't put a timetable on it. It seemed season-ending when you saw it and based on what the guys were saying afterwards. How much does that impact them? I mean, listen, they want to... a title without him, a couple of titles without him. I don't know as if they need him. It obviously, you know, you would prefer to have him than not have him, but this isn't like Steph going down or KD going down. Still a significant loss, but I think they're still, well, they're certainly the favorites. I think they still will get the job done. But last night, just a...
It's a blow.
That happens. KD fouls out. They stopped playing, essentially. I mean, they got up by 30 plus and they felt like they had it in the bag. That was One of the most remarkable comebacks. I mean, it's certainly the most remarkable comeback in postseason history in the NBA. But I was going to say one of the most remarkable comebacks I've ever seen, but I didn't see it because I turned it off.
Right. Yeah, I didn't watch it either. I fell asleep. And look, rightfully so. Like how? Like I would imagine that a lot of people who were watching that game and it got to 30 points at the half and it was just like, whatever. Like I was getting into bed and brushing my teeth as the halftime show was on, and so I like just kind of had it on in my bedroom. And when I got into bed, I just kept watching because I like watching the Warriors, and I was like, oh, I really have to get to sleep, and that made me turn the game off. But you know, to your point, you mentioned Boogie Cousins and his injury, and he goes out. Did you see the still picture, by the way, that's floating around the internet now? And you could just see like the bulge in his leg.
No, I just saw the actual video of the injury. I didn't see a still picture of it though.
I'll show you during the break, but you can like see the injury in his leg. It looks terrible. It looks terribly uncomfortable. One of the other things you brought up and Kevin Durant fouling out, and I know that it didn't happen last night. It wasn't the technical fouls yesterday that got him, but we hit on this a little bit yesterday on the show. And I know I mentioned this, he picked up two technical fouls in their game over the weekend. He picked up two technical fouls, and for the Clippers, that doesn't matter. Like, Patrick Beverley getting two technical fouls and getting tossed, it doesn't make a difference because they're not winning this series, right? The Warriors are still going to go win this series. Instead of happening in four, it'll probably happen in five or maybe... it's not going six. It's going to happen in five games now rather than in four. So it doesn't matter if Patrick Beverley keeps getting technical fouls. It does matter if Kevin Durant
does.
Yes,
it does.
It does. And we've seen this impact the Warriors once already. When Draymond Green picked up a technical foul and he had to miss a finals game, and that arguably cost them the series. So it's this really interesting balance that you have to strike because, yeah, Patrick Beverley's a pain. He's annoying. He's a nuisance. He's bothersome. But like, if you're Kevin Durant, you can't do that. You can't do it twice. You know, maybe once. You can't do it twice, right?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, these things add up, and if he were to have to sit out a key game later on in the playoffs / in the finals, that obviously would impact the Warriors' chances. Just a remarkable comeback by the Clippers. You're right. Warriors are going to be fine in this series. I still ultimately think they're going to be fine, you know, throughout the playoffs. But that is a blow to have a player as talented as DeMarcus Cousins just all of a sudden removed from your team for the rest of the run, and the run is just getting started. But if any team can overcome it, it's a team that's, you know, it's a roster full of all-stars.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting looking at that team. You figure at some point they were going to need DeMarcus Cousins to win a game. You know, it's something that we've talked about with Syracuse. Like, at some point over the course of the season, you win a game because of each and every player on the team, essentially. You got a great game out of Jalen Carey. You didn't win the game, but you got a great game out of him. You won games this year because of Buddy. You won games this year because of Tyus. You won games in the ACC tournament because of Frank Howard. Like, you win games along the way because of each and every player on the team. And you got the feeling that they were going to need DeMarcus Cousins at some point. They were going to match up with somebody who it just made more sense to just keep dumping the ball down to him, and they weren't, and there wasn't going to be anybody on the other team who would be able to stop him. And so it would have just made so much sense to dump the ball to him in the post and say, go get your 40 points, dominate this game, win us this game. They don't have that option now, but something smart that they did do at the end of the season was they re-signed Andrew Bogut. So they might be better defensively, they might be a better team with Bogut on the court, but they don't have that offensive threat of DeMarcus Cousins in the post if and when they needed it.
Two things that you said there that I want to comment on. Number one, in regards to the defense, DeMarcus Cousins is a liability defensively. So, you know, when you trade off Bogut for Cousins, you're right, you're gaining... on the defensive end, you're losing some on the offensive end, but you're gaining on the defensive end. You have enough offense that I think you'll be fine.
And Bogut's still a good passer, so like it still works.
So I think you're fine there, and you'll take the trade there. The second reason that I think based on what you were talking about was really important was you said in the college game, Buddy won him a game, or Frank won him a game, or Tyus won him a game. Well, in the NBA. Maybe DeMarcus Cousins wins him a game, but is he the difference maker in a series? I don't think that he is. So, KD's a difference maker in the series. Klay, Steph, those guys. DeMarcus Cousins, you're right. He may go out and you may need him to win you a game, but in the NBA playoffs, you can afford to drop a game that maybe you shouldn't lose because it's a best of seven. So I think the Warriors are going to be fine in that best of seven format. they're going to miss DeMarcus Cousins maybe a night or two, but over the long haul, I think they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, and I get that. I guess I think somewhere that it stood out and somewhere where people mentioned that, right, that they could have used somebody in the post is a Rockets series.
Yeah.
You know, so if it does come down to that, push comes to shove, they have to go play the Rockets, you know, in a series now. Does that matter? Does that come up as the difference? I don't think it does. Like, I don't think it does. I think that the Warriors are still good enough and better than the Rockets enough to go out and win a game, you know, to go out and win a series. And, you know, I've said this before on the show, Steve. I think this team is good enough that they're not going to lose 4 out of 7 to anybody.
Yeah,
doesn't matter. It's just so hard to do that. So would DeMarcus Cousins have made a difference? I think so, but I also think that without him, they're still good enough.
And the other thing, too, is that great teams, they use anything as motivation, right? And for this injury to happen when it did, and now, you know, the chatter might be, well, you know, is that the opening everybody else needs? Now, all of a sudden, they galvanize, they come together, they're like, people are doubting us. Even if that's not really the case, even if people really aren't doubting them, they can spin it in such a way that nobody, you know, everybody well, thinks like that we're vulnerable now, we're going to lose now. Now, you know, we're and they come together and they end up playing that much better. And so sometimes things like this can actually help a team, as strange as that sounds.
That's like when Nick Saban posts the fake media headlines on the bulletin board, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like, media, Alabama can't win anymore. And she's like, nobody said that.
Yeah, you'll use anything as a coach or as a player to gain that mental edge. And they may use this. They may feed off this and say, you know, people are doubting us now that, you know, whether or not we can get this done because DeMarcus is out. You know, I think the Warriors are going to come together. To your point, I think they roll the rest of this series. I think they're still the NBA champs at the end of the day.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. I think that it is going to take something other than just trying to do what they do to beat them. So I don't look at the Rockets and say that's going to beat them 4 out of 7. Like, you need something drastically different. You need a transcendent player, LeBron. You know, and that's why yesterday when we talked about this, I said Giannis and the Bucks are the most difficult challenge, because look at him and his historically and what he's doing this year. That's like the closest thing to a transcendent type, you know, outside of the Warriors, I think, in this playoff.
Is he top 5 NBA? I know,
like,
it's
right
easy,
now.
I know it's easy to say your gut reaction, of course, is yes. But
yeah,
give me the
now,
5.
I think so.
Give me the 5 then. Like, where does he fit? Are you putting him second?
Is he 5?
You're not putting him second.
I
right?
mean, he's the MVP this year.
No, I understand that.
But that doesn't mean he's the best. That doesn't mean that he's no. Because
some of that again is he's the best story this year.
Sure.
So in terms of players, is he the best? You know, you've got KD,
LeBron, Durant, Harden,
Anthony
Steph,
Davis. I mean,
LeBron, Durant, Harden, Steph, Giannis. I mean, is that unfair?
I'm asking you the question. You can put him wherever you want.
No, I think that's fair to say LeBron, Durant, Harden, Steph, and him.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine if that's where you want to put him.
Where do you put him?
I don't know. I just threw it out
there.
You
don't put him there.
Listen, he's an unbelievable player. I know our gut is, well, of course he's a top 5 player. He's the best right. player in the NBA this year. I think he's the best story in the NBA this year. I think you can debate, again, I'm big on Anthony Davis, you know, certainly Steph and KD and LeBron.
Steph, KD, and LeBron are obviously top 4, and Steph should really be 3. I should flip-flop him and Harden.
Some would argue with, you know, would put Harden in there, certainly. I mean, what he's able to do, I mean, that stretch that
he had
this season over the course of several months. You know, Russell Westbrook, I think, is in the conversation, even though maybe I don't, you know, I'm not putting him ahead of Giannis. I don't know. I kind of threw it out there because while he is the league MVP, I don't know if it's a no-brainer that he's top 5. You know, if you were drafting a team, I don't know if he's top 5. That was my point. He's right there. He's borderline.
I mean, he's definitely.
Well, you're
there.
Not putting him ahead of those three, and I think a lot of people wouldn't put him ahead of James Harden either.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that's probably your top 4, and then I'd put Giannis 5.
I might put Anthony Davis 5, but we're splitting hairs.
He's right there. I mean, he's there. Let's take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll get into some NFL. We'll dive into some NFL draft stuff. Russell Wilson signing that extension last night, what it might mean for the Giants, and more coming up next on Orange Nation.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Back here on Orange Nation, Seth Goldberg, Stephen Fonte with you as we go up until 2 o'clock. Pass along that we'll be joined by Taylor Radish from the Syracuse Crunch coming up at 1 o'clock. And, Steve wanted to dive into the NFL a little bit here. You know, I mentioned in the last segment the two alerts that I woke up to this morning, the two things on my phone, the Warriors blowing that 30-point lead and Russell Wilson signing a contract extension. They get it done. You know, I'm not sure. I saw the timestamp on it. I'm not sure that they got it done by the midnight deadline, so I was a little skeptical. But it does seem like they
maybe
finally...
Maybe midnight West Coast?
No, that's what I'm wondering. Maybe I did it wrong. I don't know if I did the math wrong, but I'm not sure they got it done quite by the deadline. But that being said, you know, it seems like there was this fantasy out there. I don't know how real it was. I don't know that it was real at all. But it seemed like there was this fantasy out there that the Giants would somehow end up with Russell Wilson, which would have been fantastic. Don't get me wrong. But this kind of slams the door on that one, doesn't it?
You think? Yes.
Just a bit.
Slams the door on that. And I think all along, you know, these two sides were going to work it out. And, you know, Russell Wilson becomes the highest paid quarterback in NFL history, highest paid player in NFL history. And it goes back to, you know, what you and I have discussed on the show, you know, multiple times over the years. And that is just what a crapshoot it is to pick a quarterback in the draft, right? I mean, Russell Wilson went 75th overall, right? And, you know, people said he was too small. He's only 5'11". You know, how is his skill set going to translate to the next level? And you know, teams were hesitant to pull the trigger on him. And he goes all the way into the third round, and now he becomes the highest paid player in NFL history. And you've got a guy this year in Kyler Murray that's made much the same way, similar skill set. He's, you know, he's undersized by typical NFL standards. He's about 6 foot, super athletic. He's a baseball player just like Russell Wilson was. You know, and most likely he's going number one overall. And again, it is such a roll of the dice to pick a quarterback in the NFL draft. You know, if you go back 15, 20 years, generally it's a 50-50 proposition. And we've done this exercise where half the quarterbacks work out, they end up being better than average that are picked in the first round, and half of them end up being, you know, bust, for lack of a better term. Now, for the record, I don't think Kyler Murray is going to be a bust, but it gives you an idea of, you know, people fall in love with Russell Wilson, and now they're falling in love with quarterbacks like Russell Wilson. Yep. And Kyler Murray most likely is going to go number one overall.
Yeah, I mean, you could throw Baker Mayfield into somewhat of that mold as well, of a smaller quarterback who's you know, super athletic. And they fall into that same kind of mold. And now, instead of Baker Mayfield getting drafted in the second round or the third round, and instead of Kyler Murray getting drafted in the third or the fourth or the fifth round, because he's even smaller than the other two.
I mean, Lamar Jackson went in the first round.
Right. You know, and in the past, that's not happening. In the past, those guys aren't getting drafted in the first round. Maybe Lamar. I mean, Michael Vick got drafted top
yeah,
five.
And RG3 as well, but Lamar Jackson, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, there were a lot of question marks with Lamar Jackson and his arm strength. I mean, we all know that he can run, but, you know, how can he throw in the NFL? And that remains a question, by the way, but just on his athleticism alone, he goes in the first round. You know, RG3 goes right at the top of the draft, and now, you know, Kyler Murray's going to go right at the top of the draft. You bring up Baker Mayfield. The profile that teams are looking for, it's different than, you know, the Ryan Leaf or the Peyton Manning. Right. I mean, you're not going to pass up on those guys, obviously.
Well, and it's funny because we could talk about this because we had Ryan Leaf here in this building, what, about a year ago now?
That's right.
Where he's, you know, he walks in, and even now, 20 years after the fact,
he looks like a starting quarterback.
He looks physically he like he could go play quarterback.
And, he does.
And, like, that was something that surprised me when he walked in, is when he walked into the building, I was like, taken back. I was like, wow, he's a lot bigger than I thought he was going to be.
Yeah, I think teams can, you know, can overthink it sometimes, right? You know, how do they look in these combine settings when they have, you know, just shorts on and a helmet and no shirt or no shoulder pads and nobody's rushing them, and, oh, wow, that was a great, you know, 8-yard out that he threw. Oh, that was a perfect post pattern, you know, not under pressure. I feel like scouts can overthink these things, and more so with the quarterback position than any other position,
yeah,
right? You know, you clock a wide receiver. Yeah, it's really important if they run fast. I get that. So, you know, the speedy wide receivers, their stock should go up. But for the quarterbacks, they, you know, they take them out of their natural setting, and they, you know, They just have him throw against no defense, and oh, that's, he throws a beautiful ball, and wow, he's 6'4" and he's got big hands, and you know this. Yeah. Oh man, this guy's going to be great.
Yeah, you know, I've said this before, Steve. My thought going into the draft is always, well, I watched that guy in college, right? Like, I watched that guy. He's good at football. Like,
does he pass the eye test?
Baker Mayfield was a good quarterback. Like, you could tell, like, certain things that are just going to work out. I remember hearing this about Vernon Golston, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something along the lines of, well, when you watch him on tape, he's a first-round pick. When you see him at the combine, he's a top 15 pick, and then when he takes his shirt off and he's getting measured, you're like, oh, he's a top 10 pick. And that's how the Jets end up drafting somebody who gets like four career sacks in the top 10. Like, you know, like we just overthink this. It's such a stupid inexact science. And yeah, we're talking about the quarterback, but it really is about everybody. Like, you know, look at DK Metcalf. Like, he just shot up draft boards because he showed up at the combine, benched a ton of weight, and ran like a 4.2. And Montez Sweat is running really fast and benching a lot. Like, can we just watch them play football and see if they're good?
That happened with Darko Milicic and why he went ahead of Carmelo Anthony in the 2003 draft. That, you know, the Pistons happened to watch him on a day where he couldn't miss. And again, he looks the part, and he's got, you know, and you fall in love with him. You say, oh, you know, he's the next Dirk Nowitzki. And,
right.
And you know, you base that. That major decision on, now it was more than just one workout, but they fell in love with him at one workout, and then they end up, you know, they pick him ahead of Carmelo Anthony. So, I mean, it happens in all sports, in all pros, and it's not an exact science, obviously, but for whatever reason, I feel like the quarterback position more than any other, in any other sport, they and maybe it's because it's so important, but man, scouts overthink it.
Yeah, except for the Giants, who are going to end up with Daniel Jones. That'll go well.
So, I mean, you brought up the Giants. What do you do now? I mean, what do you do? Because, you know, you're not going to get Russell Wilson, obviously. That was right. Probably a pipe dream anyway.
Oh, it would have cost you your two firsts this year and probably right. Your first next year.
Right.
Yeah, at least.
And the Cardinals, it sounds like they're taking Kyler Murray. Unless they can work out some sort of trade. And again, you're going to have to pay a king's ransom in order to get that spot. Do you like Josh Rosen? Do you like anyone else in this draft?
I would. My move, and this is the move that I've liked for a while now, I'd trade my second rounder for Josh Rosen, and I'd just go take the two best defensive linemen you can find in the first round at 6 and 17. And, like, your offensive weapons aren't what they were because you got rid of arguably the best receiver in football.
True.
However, Sterling Shepard, good receiver. Evan Ingram did a lot of good things at the end of last season. Golden Tate, professional receiver. And you have Saquon Barkley standing in the backfield. So
Professional receiver out of the backfield?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we saw what he can do as a rookie. So if you could get Josh Rosen and it costs you a second rounder and a third rounder next year or something like
certainly
that.
Certainly an upgrade.
It's certainly an upgrade, and that's a plug-in piece that you just put him in at quarterback and you say, go to work. And then you can find a couple of defensive players. Maybe you can find two good pass rushers in the first round. And all of a sudden, like, you might be a decent team. Like, I think if the Giants hadn't traded away Odell Beckham Jr. or Vernon Golston, Olivier Vernon, or gotten rid of Landon Collins, like, if they hadn't gutted the team in addition to keeping Eli Manning and they just found another quarterback, I think they would have been a pretty good team. You know, like, if last year they had Josh Rosen or Sam Darnold, like, I think you're looking at a pretty decent team last year rather than the one that has the sixth pick in the draft right now. So if they can find that quarterback, and Josh Rosen as a second-round pick is relatively cheap, and you can plug him into a team that around him isn't all that bad, you might have something interesting right from the jump.
Second-round pick for a guy that was picked in the first round. I mean, you're getting first-round value. Yeah, right, exactly. Top 10 pick first. I don't know if the Cards are going to go for that. I mean, obviously, their leverage, they lose their leverage because, you know, people know that they're going to want to get rid of him.
If they
they've
really
played
wanna,
their hand.
If they really want to trade him, they've got to trade him before the draft. If their plan really is we're taking Kyler Murray and we're going to trade Josh Rosen, they've got to trade him in the next 10 days because once you draft Kyler Murray, you lose all your leverage.
Right, but don't you think they're going to hold on to him right up until the draft because they want to see if somebody's just going to make
a king's ransom for the pick.
A huge offer for the pick. I would assume internally they've already decided what they're doing. But could your...
Or
could your decision be swayed if it's just an offer that you can't refuse?
Or could they just draft like a defensive tackle? You know, like just go get like Quinn Williams or Nick Bosa.
My guess is they're either trading the pick or they're taking Murray. I can't imagine they would hang on to that pick and not take Kyler Murray. It's too valuable, right?
I think so.
Yeah. So my guess is, again, and we'll see how they play this out, unless they're just absolutely all in on Kyler Murray, and then you know maybe they do trade him sooner rather than later. I think they hold on to Josh Rosen up until draft
Thursday
night, and then try and wheel and deal, and if they're blown away by an offer, then they make the deal and they hang on to Josh Rosen for that pick. But if not, they get rid of Rosen at some point, and Kyler Murray's their quarterback.
Why don't we take a time out here? We'll have Tommy come in with some this or that situations coming up next on Orange Nation.
Live from Armory Square,
this is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
Back on Orange Nation, Seth Goldberg, Stephen Fonte with you up until 2 o'clock, and we bring in Tommy Hogan now for Tommy's time, for pick and roll, for posting up, for...
Posting up's not bad.
Because you're posting up in the studio.
Yeah, I don't hate that. Pick and roll, I'm still rolling with that one.
Pick and roll, I think that
that's my leader in the clubhouse so far.
Your leader is pick and roll.
Yeah,
okay.
I think so. But I'm going to start out with what you guys started out with in the show, and the Warriors surprising... collapse, I guess you could say, last night. Something I enjoyed because I don't like the Golden State Warriors at all.
I have to say, I just have to throw this out because I was hearing something similar about the, because I remember I heard something on the Levitard show, remembered something you said. You said you'd rather watch the Warriors, like the actual basketball the Rockets play. Sorry. You'd rather watch the actual basketball the Rockets play than the Warriors, correct? Like take the team names out of it. You'd rather watch the actual basketball the Rockets play than the Warriors play.
Probably not.
Okay.
But I just don't like the players on the Warriors. I don't like Steph Curry. I don't like Draymond Green.
That's fair.
Kevin Durant.
I seem to remember you saying you liked watching the Rockets more.
Being stubborn. But
were you rooting for Tiger this weekend?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you were. Okay. Yeah. Because the more I get to know you, you do not like front runners or the top team. Like you don't like
I'm a
Warriors,
Yankees fan, so.
You don't like Virginia. No. Okay, you are.
I built up my hatred for Virginia this year.
I know you hate the Patriots. I share your hatred
for
the Patriots.
Okay, I just can't stand Boston sports.
But it generally seems like you don't root for the best team or the best athlete.
No.
But you do root for Tiger and the Yankees.
Yes.
Tiger and the Yankees. You're very inconsistent.
That's fine. I know. I probably am a little inconsistent, but I pick and choose what I don't like.
Fair enough.
Part of being a sports fan, in my opinion, is hating things, hating sports teams, hating athletes, and I have my teams that I hate. Maybe hate these teams more than I actually like my teams. You can debate that. But
fair enough. What do you have for us? What's first up?
What's harder to do? Blow a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals or blow a 31-point lead in the second half at home?
3-1, because it means that you have to do it three times.
Here's the thing. A 31-point, this is the biggest lead
in
playoff history
to
come
back
from.
I know, and it's really
halfway
hard to do.
Halfway through the third quarter. That's about 7.5 minutes when they got a 31-point lead.
I don't disagree. That's really hard to do. But it means that you have to lose three games in a row. And if I remember correctly, that Warriors team had not lost three games in a row until that
point.
That
Warriors team didn't happen, but it's happened before in the NBA playoffs.
And the other team had LeBron James.
Correct.
I'm taking the 31-point. That is hard to do.
I think so.
To blow a 31-point lead. Some teams don't get to 30 points in a quarter.
Right.
And it was midway through the third. It was a 31-point lead. Essentially, if the Warriors stopped scoring, they still would have a chance to win the game. So that, to me, I'll take the 31-point lead to blow that. That was harder.
All right, bonus question with this one. Is 31 the Warriors' kryptonite?
Yes.
Something up with 31.
3-1.
Now, here's something to debate. Should the Rockets, who they're presumably going to play soon, should they let James Harden wear the number 31 so that he goes off? He wears 13.
Instead of 13?
He wears 13, so there's something there, mate.
Or put
hopefully
a dash,
not a reverse jinx.
Or put a dash between like 1-3. Like
something like that. I think you got to change something.
1-3. I like that.
Take advantage of it.
That is superstition at its best.
I do like that idea.
All right. More NBA. Are you looking more forward to the NBA offseason or the NBA finals? And these NBA finals may have become a little bit more competitive with DeMarcus Cousins going down last night.
I think they did. I'm looking forward to the finals. It'll be something different. It'll be no matter who it is.
The Cavs aren't making it this year?
No.
Okay.
No. LeBron's not making it
Hot
either.
Hot take?
Yeah, exactly.
Throw out your stat about the TV ratings this year.
The Cavalier ratings, the Cavalier local TV ratings went down 58%. Here's the more surprising part, and this part I didn't tell you before the show. They were still the sixth best ratings in the league.
Is that right?
Yeah. Like, it shows how high they were that you could lose more than half of your audience and still be that high on the league ratings rankings. But yeah, the Cavs aren't going to make it. The Lakers aren't going to make it with LeBron. So it's going to be new. It's going to be different. And I think that whether it is Kawhi and the Raptors, which I don't think so, or Giannis and the Bucks, which probably, or Joel Embiid and the 76ers, like, it's going to be kind of fun to see a different team on the big stage going against that Warriors team. I'm looking forward to that.
What about you, Steve?
Boy.
More forward to the NBA offseason or NBA finals?
I guess I'll go the NBA finals because I prefer seeing actual basketball over just news of players going to different teams.
Well, and the offseason stuff is going to be done like in 2 days. You know, like, well, there's that weird like legal tampering thing where they're allowed to talk to players for like a week, but they're not allowed to sign them.
The moratorium.
That 2 days is unbelievable, though. NBA Twitter is ridiculous. The best sports Twitter there is.
That's fine, but like, I'd rather the basketball that stretches over 2 weeks.
Give me actual basketball.
All right, I'm going to put you guys on the spot here now.
Okay.
Doc Rivers is walking in front of you and drops $2,000. And it doesn't realize that. And I'm going to point out, you know it's Doc Rivers. And I believe that has something to do with the storyline. I believe this may change it a little bit. But you know it's Doc Rivers walking in front of you. You see that he drops $2,000. Are you giving it back to him, or are you crossing the street and picking it? Are you picking it up and crossing the street?
Giving it back to him and hoping he, you know,
gives you a cut of it.
Yeah, rewards you.
I did recently.
The whole thing.
I did recently have a situation.
I'm not taking $2,000 from somebody.
This just happened to me. Not $2,000. A woman dropped $20 right in front of me in the hospital a couple weeks back. As you know, I was down in New York visiting my father-in-law.
Oh, see,
it literally had just happened. But yeah, of course I gave it back to her. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Well, yeah, that one's a no-brainer. But this is Doc Rivers, who's a millionaire.
What's the matter?
He's a millionaire.
Who cares?
Nah, $2,000 is chump change for Doc.
It is chump change. He's carrying it literally in his pocket.
So you're hoping that he's giving you a little bit.
Yeah, hope he gives
you
something.
And then he's shouting you out a little bit too.
Hope he does like that Phil thing where he's like, "I made 9,000 of these last week.
Right.
Here
yeah,
you go,"
yeah.
and hand you one.
You know what? That's not even why you do it, though. You don't do it with the hope that he's going to give you some money. You do it because it's the right thing,
exactly.
Tommy. Come on.
You just do it because that's what you should be doing.
All right, I'll move on to baseball here. Who puts on the Yankee pinstripes again first? Greg Bird or someone who I actually forgot was a Yankee briefly, Troy Tulowitzki?
Tulowitzki. I think that Greg Bird is now in the Jacoby Ellsbury category of I think he's played his last game for the Yankees.
Yeah, I think he has too. Is this a fake injury?
No, I think it's legit.
Legit, but
no,
a way to get him off the team.
No, I think it's like legit, and now they're just going to be like, you know what? Thanks, but we're done here.
I think so. I think his time's up. He just
can't stay healthy, and the health has ruined what was a pretty good player. Because when he first came up, he was pretty good.
Yeah,
and you know you can see it in glimpses and in parts, but he's not able to stay on the field. And I think that at some point you just got to cut bait.
I believe Chris Davis only has two less hits than Greg Bird, and we know what Chris Davis went through to start the year, and he has more RBIs. I mean, he quadrupled his RBIs, Greg Bird's RBIs in one game. Bird has a home run and one RBI, and that came from the home run, and is batting 171. He's 6-for-35 to start the year. Horrible
Goodness
start
gracious.
To the year. He had a horrible year last year. Yes, some injuries, but he has just been no good for the Yankees. It's time to move on, I believe. And which team has more pressure going into this two-game series starting tonight, the Yankees or the Red Sox?
I think it's the Red Sox because the Red Sox haven't been hurt. You know, the Red Sox haven't been dealing with the injuries that the Yankees have. The Yankees at least have, like, that built-in excuse of, yeah, they're not playing well, but, like, look at half of their 25-man roster coming into the season is on the DL right now. You know, half of the guys that they expected to contribute are out hurt. The Red Sox don't have that. The Red Sox are just not playing well, and the Red Sox are not getting good pitching performances. And, you know, Chris Sale in particular, somebody who they just gave big money to, has not lived up to anything. So I think the Red Sox have a little more pressure on them than the Yankees.
We've been
right
doing
now.
This show too long together because we're starting to think alike, because that is exactly my reasoning as well. There is a light at the end of the tunnel for the Yankees, and they have that, you know, it's out there, and we don't know the exact date where they're going to be, you know, fully whole or relatively, you know, whole, but we know that it's coming. And their IL, you know, roster, or their, you know, their injured list roster is better than the guys who are actually out there
right
now.
You might beat the Marlins.
Yeah, I mean, as they start to get these guys back, you know, I think they'll hit their stride at some point, and it's so early in the season. I mean, you know, I'll compare it to the Mets. You know, you look at, and I looked last night, I said, okay, if the Mets win this game over the Phillies, they're in first place. And I looked back to last year on April 15th. They were something like 12-2 last year on April 15th, and then they finished 8 games below 500 and double-digit games out of first place at the end of the year. It is so early. So much can change between now and September that, you know, to your question, I think that the more pressure is absolutely on the Red Sox because, you know, whether you call it excuses or reasons or a combination of both, the Yankees have excuses slash reasons why they're starting like this. I'm not sure what the reasons are for the Red Sox.
The Red Sox are just playing bad.
Right. That's not a good reason.
Yeah, they're just not
good. Injuries are a good reason. Just playing bad is not a good reason.
Chris Sale started the year 0-3 with a 9 ERA. He's lost all 3 of his starts. And
brutal.
Look, there were concerns about him before they signed him to a 5-year extension, and then they signed him to a 5-year extension, which is why, you know, reading Buster Olney and ESPN.com, that extension was one of the most player-friendly extensions of the offseason. You know, for the most part, these extensions have been very team friendly, right? Getting guys for under market value. And look at what the Braves just did with the two contracts they signed, where they essentially robbed two players.
They really did.
I mean, they really did. I mean, they're two players that are going to out earn those contracts in 3 years, and then they're going to be playing essentially for free. The Red Sox did the opposite of that with Chris Sale, and they paid him for, like, hey, thank you for that World Series performance, which is exactly what teams are starting to get away from. And now he's come out of the gate, and he hasn't been good.
And that shoulder was bound to really start to struggle. Like, he is having some issues with velocity. And with that herky-jerky, violent windup that he has, it was bound to happen. And they still didn't wait to see what – it was happening at the end of last year. Like, I know he closed out the World Series and really looked good in that ninth inning. I mean, he may have pitched the eighth and the ninth. But still, to not wait that out, something that you saw at the end of last season, and to give him this money now – although, as Yankee fans, we've seen now Aaron Hicks and Luis Severino, who got extensions and are now in the IL.
They're both there, too.
So, and if – here's the thing.
Those two contracts are way more team-friendly than player-friendly.
But if the Mets ever did that or the Red Sox, the Yankee fans, including myself, would be all over those teams for doing it. But with the Mets, they have a past of it. So that's why they've earned the reputation and they've earned the chirping. The Yankees haven't done this before. So
yeah, and again, those two contracts are very team-friendly. So – okay, they invested in people, and they got hurt. All right, like it happens. All right, let's take a time out here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one. Tommy will be back later with today's business, and we're coming up at the top of the hour with Taylor Radish from the Syracuse Crunch, all ahead on ESPN Radio.